Community Connections, CKMS. Local sounds, thoughts, passions, and success. Celebrate local, your neighbor's got a story to tell. Community Connections, CKMS.
Happy Monday, Waterloo Region. It's a holiday Monday. Kind of drab and overcast and really, really humid out there. Even in the studio, it's pretty humid. In the studio, aside from the humidity, we have Nick Boardman, who's brought in Caleb Koo, and they're going to be doing a live, on-air, in-studio performance. Hit it, guys.
The love that I'm craving is what I need most. This whole thing is killing me. God only knows. A carnal desire can be an awful thing, especially when you internalize such an old thing. Tread lightly on my heart, please don't tear me all apart. I don't know if anyone could ever take her part. And go slowly with me, 'cause I can't guarantee that I can be the man you want me to be. But I'm a warning. Tread lightly. You really want me to love you, that I do know. My heart is broken from love long ago. I'll try my best to hold you when the night is through. That is not a concept new to me or you. Tread lightly on my heart, please don't tear me all apart. I don't know if anyone could ever take her part. And go slowly with me, 'cause I can't guarantee that I can be the man you want me. Tread lightly. Tread lightly on my heart, please don't tear me all apart. I don't know if anyone could ever take her part. And go slowly with me, 'cause I can't. Tread lightly.
Lovely stuff. Nick Boardman, welcome to CKMS Community Connections. And Caleb, welcome back.
Great, thanks for having us today, Bob.
It's good to have you in the studio. So, you're a country music performer?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's kind of evolved over the past couple of years and spanned a few more genres than country, but country's kind of the house that I live in.
Yeah. How does that get accepted here in Kitchener-Waterloo? Is Kitchener-Waterloo a country music town?
Surprisingly, yes. Kind of when I first started out, I probably started out about 3 years ago now, and I kind of noticed that there was a bit of a divide in the whole country scene, and there's a lot of, you know, Waterloo's kind of rich with music, but there was kind of a lack of country music or representation of country music. But kind of as I've progressed in this career and kind of played some more shows, I've met some great like-minded people, and what I kind of come to find is a lot of people that dabble in country, or they once played country music, and they're just kind of they're kind of scared to bring that country music to the table or play that at a show because there's no reception to that locally. But I think that's slowly changing.
Yeah, there's a, you're right, there's a wide variety of talent here in KW. And I think it's about time we had some regular country music in venues, on the air, radio stations. We've got a country radio station in town too, don't they?
Yeah, 106.7.
Yeah, exactly. So there must be an audience. If commercial radio can make a go of country music, then you must have an audience.
Yeah, we're nestled kind of in a unique spot in southern Ontario, right here in Kitchener-Waterloo. We're surrounded by farm towns, a lot of agricultural mm-hmm. spots, and that's where country music comes from. So I think it resonates with a lot of people still.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been playing around town much?
Yeah, we've played quite a few local dates. We've kind of been spanning out a little bit further, but we've played some places like Revive, that used to be Old Harmony Lunch.
Oh, yeah.
We've also played some small outdoor gigs and things like that. I did Kitchener's Neighbors Day last week. And, we've had a lot of fun playing locally.
Yeah, and you had a bit of a tour just recently, too.
Yes.
Some things on your website there.
Yeah, so to push one of my more recent singles, Tread Lightly, that came out, re-released in late April, we've gone on a Tread Lightly mini tour. We've kind of been all across Ontario playing some bars, some festivals, some fun little gigs, and we've had a great time doing it.
Yeah. So you produced that album, back in April sometime? Released it in April?
Yeah, so that song, Tread Lightly, I originally released, that was the first song I ever wrote. That came out back in 2019.
Oh, okay.
And I just really didn't feel that I did the song justice. You know, the narrative, that heartbreak and kind of being caught in that in-between between two relationships. So we came back, revisited that, and Matt Cable co-wrote that with me. And also produced that, and so we recut that in Toronto, and the one that's out now is kind of the version that's my favorite version, I would say.
So what changed? What changed from the time that you wrote it to the time that it got produced?
So at the time the first Tread Lightly came out, I had no musical training. It was kind of just like applied music theory and kind of what I had acquired along the way. And I think from that point, I've kind of acquired some more skills. I've had more experience just performing and kind of finding my own sound, finding my own voice. And I went through Seneca for independent songwriting performance. So I got to connect with a lot of great people and kind of build on my my skill a little bit. So I felt that I was at a better point in my career to tackle that song.
Right. And change the lyrics, change the melody, change the rhythm.
Yeah, the lyrics remain the same. The one thing that we added, it's in a different key. There's actually a key change.
Yeah.
So we added some fun little things, and there's just dynamically, it's just a different song.
Okay. Do you have recordings of the original version?
Yeah. I have some demos on my phone that probably will never be heard because they'll make people's ears bleed. But the original version is still out there kicking around in a few places. I'm
going to try and hit you up for additional airtime and see if we can do some comparative musicology from the early Nick Boardman to the current Nick Boardman.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. There's some old demos that are kicking around yet there out there.
Yeah. Okay, so you did that on the tour. What was the tour? Where'd you go?
So we've kind of been all over the place. We've played a lot of farm towns. We were lucky enough to play a couple agricultural events. We were playing the Dairy Expo, the Canadian Dairy Expo in Stratford. Okay. And that kind of kicked off the tour. We've played a lot of bars. We've played some festivals. Most recently, we played the Horseshoe Tavern in Toronto.
Oh.
Great time doing that.
Tell me about that.
Oh, what a show that was. Last Tuesday, so almost a week ago, we went up to the Horseshoe Tavern and we played one of the events they've been doing for a few decades, from my understanding, called a New Music Night. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Canadian acts have got kind of their rise from that. I know Nickelback went through that.
Okay.
And it's just kind of a multi-bill night of a bunch of different acts and bands. And it's completely all different genres. There was acoustic heavy rock. There was some kind of screamo type stuff. so we were definitely unique with our country sound. Okay. And we had a great time. We spent the day in Toronto. We went up there, played the show, and we probably had the best reception we've ever had playing a show at the Horseshoe.
Really?
And it kind of solidifies what you're doing and kind of makes it all worthwhile.
That's prestigious. That's a good thing to have on your show list.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And just even going into the green room and seeing the names of the people we were listening to in the car right there or on the wall, kind of breathtaking.
Yeah, really. When you're on tour, you touring with a band?
Yes. Yeah, so right now we're touring with the Boogie Boy Band.
Oh.
And that consists of Caleb Koo, we got right over here.
I brought Caleb into the studio. Hi, Caleb.
How you doing?
Caleb on guitar. We got Gabe Potter, another friend of mine from Toronto. He's on guitar. Grady Kaplan, who's out on tour with another artist at the moment on pedal steel. Mitch Camacho on upright bass. And sometimes we sub out for Sam Weber, who plays bass as well. Cool. And our drummer is Johnny Lantine.
Okay, all electric bass.
Electric bass, yeah. Typically when Mitch is around, though, we got a big upright bass and we're banging around on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. And you're in the studio, so it's the same lineup?
No, for the studio work that I've done so far, it's been session players. Matt Cable produces for me, so he gets a lot of guys to come in.
Okay.
Stu Weinberg, Will Hebbs, things like that. A lot of Toronto players.
Okay. That's got to be awkward because it's people that you probably haven't played with much that don't necessarily know your style.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I'm kind of figuring out, that it's definitely, there's a divide there. Playing with session players or having people just play on your song and you sing over a track is not the same as playing with the guys live. No. Not, it's a completely different thing.
So you're doing each track independently, so you don't have the musicians to bounce off, or the musicians bouncing off your cues, and it's all pre-recorded individual tracks, essentially. I have this impression that when you're in a studio, you've got the band around you and, you know, a nice soundproof room, and you're all doing your thing together, individually mic'd, of course, but that's not how it works anymore.
No, we have done some session work with Live Off the Floor. It's probably been my favorite material. The Beam Blues we just put out, my most recent single, that was Live Off the Floor. Some of the other singles we've done so far is all session work. So it's somebody records their part at home, they send it in, and we piece it together in the DAW, and then I come in and I cut my vocals, and then Matt does his engineering. Okay. Which, you know, that's one way to do it. A lot of people are going that way, but you can't beat Live Off the Floor. That's a unique thing.
I've been hearing a lot of people coming in saying that they're doing their tracks individually. I think it was a lot to do with COVID, too, where people couldn't get in a studio together.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the beautiful thing, too, I mean, maybe this is a positive for individual recording, is a lot of people, you know, if there's a player out in Saskatchewan and you want to have them on your track, you can just record a steel and send it over, and there you have it. You don't have to arrange for him to come in and an accommodation and everything like that.
So that's got to be better for all the musicians, getting more gigs and less expensive gigs because no travel expenses.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people are probably the busiest they've ever been because that technology is there now to kind of, you know, provide that equipment for them.
Right, right. What kind of equipment do you use? You've got a home studio, I take it.
Yeah, I have a small home studio. It's relatively small and very outdated. So a lot of the time I spend with Matt Cable up at his studio in Toronto.
Okay.
So he kind of handles most of the equipment, and he's always got a revolving door of new mics coming in, and he's quite an audiophile, so he's got all the new stuff coming in and out all the time, so it's hard to keep up sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. When you're recording yourself, do you go through a lot of different takes that you discard completely? I'm just curious about the songwriting process that you go through.
Yeah, honestly, my songwriting process, I think, is kind of probably not the traditional songwriting process.
Yeah.
What I really do, I don't think I'm doing anything exceptionally different or anything like that, but I spend a lot of time outside in nature. I'm a big hiker. I love fishing.
Okay.
So I kind of find that's when I'm most connected and most in tune. So I bring along a little notebook, and I'll kind of just write down lyrics or things that come to mind, almost like poetry. And then I'll bring that home, and I'll show some of the guys. I'll say, anybody have any ideas for this? And they might lay down a track, and we'll kind of bounce off collaboratively together. Or, you know, if something's really in my mind, I'll sit down with an acoustic guitar and kind of hammer something out. But I would say most of my writing thus far has been collaborative.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious. If everybody has their own home studio, either that's going to result in a lot more music getting written and probably a lot more music getting discarded as well.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because, you know, you can be sitting up at 2 a.m. and something strikes you and you sit down and you bang that song out, and then you listen to it the next morning and go,
yeah,
nobody should ever hear that.
Yeah. Coffee clarifies the mind, doesn't it?
Truly does. It truly does. Yeah. It's a nice safety net.
Yeah. You want to try something else?
Sure. This one's called Home.
Okay.
Take another lonely night. The days just blur together now with no end in sight. You know the way I feel for you, it'll be alright. Cause you fail on my dark days with your life. They say that home is where the heart is. Yeah, I've heard it all. That could be your old man's farmer underneath the sycamore. I could be running through a field tonight looking up at the moon. Yeah, no matter where my house is, I feel at home when I'm with you. Sitting by the phone, I'm waiting for your call. Without you, this house I'm in is not a home at all. When you're around, you numb all of the pain. You bring on out the sunshine after long days of rain. They say that home is where the heart is. Yeah, I've heard it all before. That could be your old man. Yeah, no matter where my house. that home is where the heart is. Yeah, I've heard it all before. That could be your old man's farmer underneath a sycamore. Could be running through a field at night, looking up at the moon. Yeah, no matter where my house is, I feel at home when I'm with you. Feel at home when I'm with you.
That an early song, or is that a more recent song?
That's a bit of an earlier one. That one was co-written with Matt Cable and Emma Clancy, who's also another local musician around town here.
Okay. Tell me about the early Nick Boardman. How long have you been doing this?
So I've been doing this, I would say, probably about 3 or 4 years now. I'd say the beginnings of it were kind of disjointed. Yeah, I would say professionally probably for about a year or two now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I got the impression you've been at this for like a decade or more.
No. Probably about 3 or 4 years I put out music, and then I would say I kind of call it professionally because the last 2 or 3 years has been actually more structured, mm-hmm. With dates, actually releasing music and kind of, you know, actually promoting stuff and having media releases and things like that. Yeah, I would say the biggest difference for me personally is in the beginning, I think I wasn't sure of what I wanted my sound to be. I knew I was a country music fan. I kind of live in the camp of, you know, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Hank Williams. Yeah, okay. And I was being pulled in a few different directions to be commercially viable, I think. You know, which I can't knock that. Obviously, country music is a diverse genre. There's a lot of things within country music, a lot of subgenres, but that wasn't the sound I wanted. I didn't want to sound like the newest, hottest guy.
Right.
So I think kind of putting those two sides of the spectrum together kind of created that early sound. And I think now I'm kind of hammering out that the Nick Boardman sound that I really, truly want to have.
Okay. Anticipate any changes to that in the future?
You know what? I think the whole idea of having a sound, I think, is the evolution of the artist. Yeah. And I hope to see that progress kind of with my career. And you know what? We're kind of living in the Southern rock blues country world right now.
Yeah.
And, who's to say where we'll be in a year or two from now?
Fans don't always like that. You know, the fans want you to stay exactly the way you are now.
That's true. That's true. There's been some people that, you know, they listen to a new single and they go, well, that's not country, or that's not the country I want to listen to. I mean, used to listen to Morgan Wallen. I can't listen to this stuff.
Yeah. So for every fan that drops off, hopefully you get two back in return.
Exactly. Yeah. That'd be a nice ratio.
Yeah. So the music you're singing isn't old-time country. Oh, the really early stuff, 1950s and earlier. You said Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash is even sort of straddling that era. But you're modern country. You're today's country.
Yeah, I like to think that a lot of the writing I have and some of the newer content, I think the newer stuff I have kind of reflects that older traditional influence. Mm-hmm. But I think within my writing, I think I like to think of it's a meeting of old style, traditional style meets a kind of a vintage modern sound, which is kind of a paradox to say a vintage modern sound. But I think it has elements of both within it that I truly hope to push more and kind of find how I creatively can interject that a little bit more into the music.
Yeah. What about your instrumentation? You said aside from the bass, you're pretty much all electric. That's not a traditional country lineup.
No, that's not. I draw a lot of influence from especially the instruments and kind of built this crew around me from a lot of the old Southern rock guys, mm-hmm. you know, Marshall Tucker, Lynyrd Skynyrd, that kind of realm.
Okay.
And
so that's more country rock.
Yeah. A little bit more country rock. And we have a lot of fun kind of bouncing off each other and playing that. Or we take a lot of the older songs, kind of add a new flair to them and kind of do them in our own style.
Yeah. And you said you do cover songs too.
Yeah, we do covers, originals, and a nice mix of both, I think, a nice blend.
Yeah. Anything out of the country realm that you cover?
Not really at the moment. We like to noodle around with stuff in rehearsal, but I think the stuff that actually makes the show and that's in the set list is a lot of country, some Southern rock, and some old blues as well.
Blues.
I draw a lot of influence from some old blues.
Can't go wrong with blues.
No, some names like Lightning Hopkins or Jimmy Reed and Robert Johnson, those kind of guys.
Robert Johnson, the original blues guitarist.
Yes, yeah. I think once you kind of listen to the blues, you listen to some of that older country stuff, and you go, oh, I can see a little bit of a parallel between these two.
Yeah, probably. I think everything originated from blues.
Yeah, oh yeah, it has to. And I think there's some people that kind of deny that, but they're living in a bit of a fallacy.
Yeah, that could be. So, when you're not doing music, is this a full-time gig for you, the music?
Yeah. It's just about full-time for me. I do work part-time down St. Jacob's at Fat Sparrow.
Okay.
That's kind of like a part-time thing for me right now, but music is, I've been the busiest I've ever been with it right now.
Okay.
And it's actually been paying the bills, so I can't complain.
No kidding. Okay. That makes you unique amongst a lot of musicians, because there's a lot of people that have to keep the day job up to pay the bills and then do as much music as they can in the off time.
Yeah, I've been really lucky to kind of stumble into the opportunities that I have. I never really thought I would ever be a musician to any degree, but we've had a lot of success doing it, and yeah, I want to keep the momentum going.
Excellent. So when my word of advice to the people out there, keep at it. You can be successful like Nick Boardman.
Can tell my high school teacher that.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, one of the first gigs I ever did, it was kind of like a talent country show kind of deal. And I went up and did two songs, and it was the first time I ever performed in front of anybody. I was probably about 16 years old. And I absolutely butchered a cover of Heaven Can't Be Found by Hank Williams Jr.
No.
I was just so nervous, killed the song, and I snuck out the back door before I could do the second song and drove back home. And I thought to myself, man, country music is just not for you. You cannot do this. And I sat down with a friend of mine, Johnny, and he said, you know what, try that again. Yeah. And we tried it again, and here we are today.
What'd you try it again? What was your second chance?
I'm trying to think. The second chance probably would have been at a bar out in Wingham. A friend of mine kind of, they acquired a bar and they started doing live entertainment. So I went out there and started playing some songs, and they really resonated with the people. You know, people would pull me aside and go, oh, my grandpa used to listen to that. Or I remember that from my grandma's days. And something like that just really, it kind of touched my heart a little bit, because yeah. I think I'm an old soul. I love all the old stuff, the vintage stuff. And it's great to kind of hear that sticks with people.
So being told that you sound like somebody's grandma, or you sound like the music that somebody's grandma listened to, is a compliment to you.
Yeah, in a weird twisted way, yes.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. I can see people not necessarily appreciating being compared to the old timers like that. Yeah, it's I guess it depends on the performer, depends on how the compliment is presented.
Right, yeah. I've definitely heard a lot worse. So yeah. I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah. Getting good reception all over the place. Like I say, I was thinking that you've been doing this for like a decade or more. So you've obviously made a good impression on me.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, even last week we were in Toronto. We played two dates. We did the Black Swan Tavern, and then we did the Horseshoe Tavern 2 days later. And we were kind of worried about, I shouldn't say worried, but a little bit anxious about what the reception of the country music would be in downtown Toronto. I know there's a bit of a country scene starting to form, and there's some people coming through there to play. But we had probably the best reception we've ever had, and that was really great and rewarding to have that.
Okay, who would have thought that Toronto was a country town?
Yeah, I don't know if it was because I had a hat that nobody had ever seen before or something like that, but it was well received.
It's a good hat.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I've got a few of them.
Yeah, nice canvas hat with some kind of beadwork on the hat band, it looks like.
Yeah, so. I've caught some big bass wearing this one before.
Okay, very nice, very nice. When you got started, how did you acquire your band members? I mean, Caleb, how did you meet up with Caleb?
So Caleb was actually a unique encounter. I was walking down King Street with a few friends, having a couple peers and maybe a pop or two. And we look over and there's a band playing. And I was kind of watching them, and I knew the drummer, Mike Phillips. He's a local sound engineer as well.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went over to chat with Mike, and Caleb blew me away with his intonation and the tone of his playing. And so I kind of pulled him aside and we chatted for a bit. And I said, you know, here's what I do. I have a couple dates coming up and I'd be interested in having you on. And so he gave me his card, and we sat down and started kind of picking and grinning together, and he's been stuck with me ever since.
So Caleb, how do you switch between the jazz music that you were in here playing before to the country genre that Nick demands of you?
Well, funnily enough, actually, I end up playing a ton of different music. So honestly, the mix from country to jazz isn't as big as most people would think.
Huh?
I end up playing, you know, pop music, funk, blues, rock, jazz, everything. So I find, at least personally for me, having a jazz background, when I listen to the country music, it allows me to kind of throw in extra harmonies and chord extensions that other people wouldn't think about traditionally, because I'm coming from a different background.
Putting a jazz spin on the country music.
Exactly, yeah. I try not to go crazy with it, right? But I throw in a couple, you know, different notes maybe in there that makes it a little bit more interesting to listen to, I think. I think it kind of sets it apart from a lot of other stuff that's going on, too.
You approve of that, Nick?
Yeah, and actually, to kind of interject in that conversation, the most recent single I put out was called the Beam Blues, and I co-wrote that with Caleb last summer, and we put that out, and that's actually Caleb playing live off the floor on that track. It's a live single, Grady Kaplan on steel guitar, and it actually got put on some Spotify playlists, and I was talking to Caleb about this a couple days ago. The one playlist is actually a jazz playlist, and I never would have thought what some of my music would end up on a jazz playlist, but again, some of that tonality and some of the things that you kind of threw in there shook it up a little bit and added some spice.
Yeah. How do those playlists get generated? Is that based on demand by the streaming listeners, or is that something that you have any control over?
It's kind of hard. You have a bit of control over it, but, you know, at the end of the game, it's Spotify kind of deciding where you go.
Okay.
They have some curators that some of them may actually listen to the song. Some of them are kind of like a AI bot generated. But what I do is I pitch the song about a month before it's actually released, and you fill out all these forms that Spotify sends you, Spotify Canada, and you just add all the players, some information about the songs, your background as an artist, and if they feel the song is a fit for one of the playlists they have, they'll playlist it, and okay. they'll add you.
Okay. That helps in getting your music out there, because I guess some people will only subscribe to the playlist. They won't subscribe to the individual musicians. So you're depending on that for the revenue stream?
It definitely gives you a huge, huge bump. I would notice, you know, the first time I put music out before, it was completely organic. I didn't really do much promotion. I just put a post on Instagram and said, hey, look, this is up. And this time around, I kind of worked with some people on some marketing and some promotional stuff. I got some professional photography done and mm-hmm. Just really worked at pitching the song. And I've noticed a significant difference, probably a 110% increase in viewership.
Really? And how is the revenue stream from that? Is that a primary income stream for you, or is it just kind of like trickling in at the back?
Definitely a slow trickle. It's like a little creek. Yeah, streaming doesn't really pay the bill so much. It's a little bit of a chunk, but it's minuscule compared to other ways of revenue from music.
Okay. The only thing that I can think of being worse is getting the revenue from the radio plays.
Yes. Yeah. I'm still waiting on those checks.
Well, when you get our next SoCan audit, we'll be sure to load up the playlist with Nick Boardman music.
Sure. I appreciate that.
We'll do that for you. And anybody else too, actually. If you're a musician out there in Waterloo Region, and you've got some music you want played on the radio, send it our way, office@radiowaterloo.ca, and label it CanCon or KWCon if you're from the KW Cambridge area, and then that'll catch my attention. I'll stick it in the library and maybe get you into the studio for an interview on CKMS Community Connections, and like Nick and Caleb, a live on-air in-studio performance. You have time for another one?
Yeah, so okay. I think we'll switch it up a little bit, and we'll take you down to some old blues, some old Jimmy Reed.
All right.
You don't know me, baby, like I know myself. If you don't want me, baby, get you somebody else. 'Cause you better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever say goodbye, I'm gonna haul right off and die. Darling, how I love you. Long as I've got breath, if we part, I know, sweetheart, it will worry me to death. You better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever say goodbye, I'm gonna haul right off and die. Get sick in accident, 'cause I'm healthy as I can be. If we part, I know, sweetheart, it will be the death of me. You better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever say goodbye, I'm gonna haul right off and die.
Blues is always good, especially on a Monday morning.
Of course, everyone's feeling them.
Yeah. That's not on any of your recorded music. I haven't got that in the studio.
The Take Out Some Insurance?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a Jimmy Reed cover.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not something you've recorded and distributed yourself.
No, no. That's what we like to do live. We've been doing that one for quite a while.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you.
You've been practicing at that. Yeah. Sounds like you got a bit of a yodel in there.
Yes.
Got any good yodeling songs that in your repertoire?
Yeah, we do You're Cheating Hard, an old Hank Williams cover, so we do a lot of yodeling on that, and that really hits home with some of the older crowd.
I'll bet it does.
Yeah.
I'll bet it does. Yeah, I can see that being the old-time country, and yeah, that's something that we're looking to get a bit more of on the radio station, too.
Definitely, definitely. And I think a lot of the stuff we do, I kind of have that, you know, there's a couple songs we do where I add a little bit of a yodel, or the cadence is a little bit different, I think, based upon some of my vocal influences.
Yeah, yeah. Where'd you get that from? Where'd you learn to yodel?
Well, I've worked with two vocal teachers so far in my career. I worked with Falconer Abraham out of Toronto at Seneca College, and he was an amazing vocal coach and kind of pulled the sound out of my nose. I have a big nasal resonance, and so a lot of it kind of
sounded like this.
And we kind of got it out of there, and I've been working with Amanda Kine now for about the past year, who's very active in the region.
Yeah.
Didn't
know she was a vocal coach.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah, she's got her studio in Waterloo here, and we've been doing work about every 2 weeks now for the past year or so, and I've come bounds, I would say, from where I was even about a year ago. Okay. But she kind of supports that whole old sound that I'm kind of going for, and some of that yodeling as well.
Yeah. So next time you see Amanda, invite her into the studio, because I'd love to interview her too.
Yeah, I'm sure she'd love to do it. She's kind of got a foot in everything around around town with music.
Yeah, exactly. When you're being taught vocal technique, what kind of things do you do to learn this kind of thing? I have no idea what vocal training is all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unique for everybody based upon the skill set that you have going into it. Maybe you have no knowledge at all. When I went into it, I was completely professionally untrained. I had never really had professional training at that point. So my whole thing with vocal training was unlearning a lot of the bad habits that I taught myself. I'm a big Hank Williams Jr. fan, so I listened to a lot of Hank Williams Jr. And I taught myself to sing in this low kind of gravelly voice that wasn't I wouldn't say a good image of what my actual voice was. So Amanda kind of helped me find out what my own voice would sound like, and I could kind of apply that to the songs that I did like without doing kind of almost an impersonation of the people that I kind of looked up to. So it's a lot of unlearning.
Okay, but if you wanted to do that, if you wanted to have that old gravelly voiced timbre, is that something that you can be taught? Is that something you can learn?
I think to a degree. I think personally, I would believe that you have to be born with the right equipment. Certain people are not capable of reaching certain sounds, but I would say for the most part, you can vocally train to almost sound like anything or anybody that you'd like to. There is limitations, there's range, but stylistically, you know, I think of somebody like Johnny Cash, who went in to do a vocal lesson. They said, you know what, don't come again. You're born with what you get.
Yeah. Oh, you sound okay. So whatever you've been learning has paid off, I think.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Bob. Yeah.
What were you in college? You said you had a program in college that you followed as well, songwriting?
Yeah. So I went to Seneca. It's an accelerated program. It's a two-year diploma kind of condensed into 1 year. It's called Independent Songwriting Performance. Okay. And all the professors are active in the industry in Canada somehow. Mika Barnes I worked with, he used to be in the Nylons at one point in time.
Okay.
Murray Foster was another professor I had. He was in a Great Big Sea. So everybody has this musical experience and repertoire that they kind of bring to the table and kind of fill our heads with.
So what's in the curriculum? What do you learn in the songwriting and performance course?
So the first semester was very heavy with theory. Kind of it was the training wheels of the whole industry and music itself, because everybody came from varying levels of knowledge and skill. So we kind of all learned a lot of theory, a lot of practical performance. And then when we kind of got to the second semester, it was very heavy on the performance aspect, you know, connecting to the audience, kind of understanding how to work an audience or, you know, how they're receiving you and kind of how to choose songs based upon that. And it was very heavy with writing as well. Murray Foster had some great songwriting classes. Blair Packham as well was another name that we worked with a lot. And I would say it really honed in on my writing skills and collaborative as well, because we had to work with other students within the program. And everybody was from a different walk of genre. It's something completely different. So
It wasn't a country music songwriting and performance.
Not at all. I was probably the only guy that was in the country vein of things.
Okay.
So we would sit down, and I sat down with a lot of like alternative rock and some emo music and things like that. So it was an interesting crossover.
Really, really. And learning these other styles, I mean, or you're not learning any particular styles at all. That must broaden your skill set, your repertoire.
It does. It really does. And I think what it also taught me too in writing is how people receive the lyrics or how you're portraying a narrative. I think in certain genres, you know, narratives, the way it's talked about or the language that's used is specific maybe to that genre. So I think it made me aware of maybe you can add elements of different things to kind of make something unique or brand new.
So you're saying that when you're writing songs, you're writing in a particular country music style using words and phrases that you wouldn't use in a jazz composition or a blues composition or just plain rock and roll.
Yeah, and I think especially in the country realm, I can attest to this, it's very easy to kind of get into that, you know, the old country language or use some of these, the phrasing and dialogue that is maybe a little bit outdated or a little bit specific to country music. So when somebody hears it outside of the country world, I think that's where it gets that stereotype of being kind of hokey or kind of redneck. Okay. And so I keep that in mind when writing to kind of, you know, write with my unique voice, not necessarily a country voice or anything else. It's just me.
And then having a broad exposure to different genres helps give a larger audience to your music as well.
Yes, and I think anybody, any musician, a player, a vocalist, whoever might be an artist, I think it's so beneficial to just immerse yourself with a diverse catalog of music. Maybe you're not playing that, but you just experience that to kind of understand where that sound comes from.
You said an accelerated course? How long was that?
It was just 1 year. So it was equivalent to a two-year diploma program, but I completed it in about a year.
Okay, that's still a long time to be learning, you know, performance and songwriting.
Yeah, it was quite a heavy course load. We had about like eight classes per semester or something like that. So it was pretty busy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Full-time course load.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So here's my question to everybody. When you're writing music, do you write the words first or do you write the music first?
That's hard. It's tough. I would say personally, I write the words first, which I know isn't mirrored by a lot of the, you know, co-writers that I work with. But I typically lean towards, I have an idea of a story or I had an experience that day and I go, I have some phrasing in mind that I could really, you know, punch that story with. So I write that down and then I kind of, maybe I'll call up Caleb or I'll call one of the other guys up and I'll say, let's sit down and kind of, let's come up with something here.
Okay. So then you had the music afterwards with the collaborators, run through it a few times. And do you find that you need to change the lyrics to match the music that's been put to those words?
Occasionally, yes. Oh. Occasionally, yes. I think before matching the words to the music, maybe what will come is you'll sit down with another writer and they'll say, is there a better way you could say that to match the music? So you're changing the phrasing, or maybe you just drop a part out entirely. Even with Bean Blues, when me and Caleb sat down to write that, I don't think I changed actually a lot of the original lyrics that I had, but the phrasing kind of changed, and Caleb had a lot to do with that, with his playing.
Okay. And does that come from the stuff that you learned at the songwriting course?
Yeah, I would attribute a lot to that. I think versatility, just writing. I think even just sitting down with a guitar and somebody else and kind of being able to meet in the middle and kind of create a sound is something that's is very unique.
Yeah. So creating the music afterwards, you do that on the guitar. Guitar is your composing instrument.
Yeah, for sure, an acoustic guitar.
You too, Caleb, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody seems to like the guitar. I guess it's a portable instrument. You don't have to lug a piano from place to place to be creative.
Yeah, I did play piano for a short time, but that just wasn't... Me and the piano didn't really get along, so I'll have to try that out again sometime.
No keyboards at all in your band lineup, studio, or performing?
Not at the moment. Matt Cable, who does the production for me, plays keys on all the songs. His nickname around Toronto is Matty Keys, so he does a lot of organ work and some key work and stuff like that.
Organ, too. Cool.
Yeah.
So... when you've got the music all performed and or all sussed out, you know, lyrics are written, music has been composed, where do you get, at what point do you start doing the recording and how does the recording proceed from there?
Yeah, so typically what I would do is I would go to Matt and I would go, you know, here's the song, and we might sit down with 10 songs and out of those songs we'll record two of them. And we'll sit down and we'll kind of come up with a release plan. If it's something that I'm going to release, I like to come up with a plan to see which would be the strongest release. Okay. Or what kind of work based on the project that we're doing. And if the song fits, me and Matt will sit down, we'll come up with a demo, we'll send it out to a bunch of session guys. And usually people just hop right on it right away. And within a week or so, you could have all the session beds laid down. And then I just have to lay a vocal and then it's mixed and mastered and there's the song.
And so you're doing a bunch of different songs all at the same time.
Yeah, right now I think we probably got at least 5 active songs in the going.
Oh, yeah. So stuff in the pipeline.
Yes, yeah, we have an EP coming out. No release date solidified yet, but that will be coming out soon. That'll be out shortly.
Okay, what kind of stuff's on there?
I like to think it's a nice blend of a little bit of almost like a boogie rock, kind of almost comparable to like an Allman Brothers kind of sound.
Okay.
There's also some, you know, more modernized country, and there's also a bit of the reflection of the blues sound as well. So it's a nice medley of everything.
How many tracks on the... it's an EP?
Yes. Yeah, it'll be about 5 or 6 tracks.
5 or 6 tracks. And release dates sometime this year still?
Yeah, hopefully this year yet, but to be determined. Okay.
And these songs that you've got in the EP, are they part of your lineup for live performances?
Most of them are, yes.
Would you have one of those available for us today?
Sure, sure. We can lay one down right here. This one's called the Bean Blues.
Bean Blues.
Well, I felt what you said when you said our love was dead. So I went to where I called home. A lonesome mind shouldn't be alone. But it ain't just me. I've got my misery and a big old bottle of old Jimmy Beam. I got the Beam Blues. I walked holes in my shoes. I got the Beam Blues. What's a lonesome mind to do? A puff of smoke fogs my mind and takes me to another time when I wasn't lonesome blue or laid up thinking of you. I need myself a saving grace to save me from this cold place. I got the Beam Blues. I've wiped holes in my shoes. I got the Beam Blues. What's a lonesome mind to do? Lord, I often do wonder, will my skies fade to blue while I'm thinking of you? I need myself a saving grace to save me from this cold place. I got the Beam Blues. I've wiped holes in my shoes. I got the Beam Blues. What's a lonesome mind to do?
Bean Blues, live in the studio at CKMS Community Connections. Nick Boardman and Caleb Koo performing and playing guitar and singing. It's wonderful. We've got a track of that in our library, something you sent to us called Bean Blues Live. Didn't realize the reference to Beam was Jim Beam until I listened to the lyrics just now. Yeah. I'm really bad at that. I'm really bad for not listening to the lyrics, just listening to the music, having the music, you know, take me completely away. And then the lyrics come later on repeated listenings, which they did today.
Jim Beam kind of sneaks into a few songs every now and then. Yeah. Whiskey's a common topic.
Yeah, I guess that's country music.
Yes, yeah, it is. Definitely.
So that's something on your lineup when you're doing live performances.
Yeah, that's kind of a big one we do, and we have a lot of fun with that one, especially with the pedal steel.
I can kind of open up
with the solo, and it's kind of a back and forth between guitar and the pedal steel, and it's a really fun thing to do live.
Yeah, yeah. What do you got coming up?
So some live shows that we have coming up. We're playing the Acoustic Grill in Picton at the end of July. We're also playing Royal City Studios July 28th. We're playing TWB Brewing in Kitchener August 11th. We're one that I'm really excited about. I'm hosting a small country festival in Waterloo Park at the end of August. Uh-huh. August 26th at the Waterloo Park Band Show. We're just about to announce that and put some tickets out. And that'll be myself, Paige Rutledge, and Amanda Kind. And we'll have some food trucks down there, and that'll be called Country by the Creek. So keep your eyes peeled for that. That'll be a really fun event.
That sounds like a great time, yeah. How do people get a hold of you if they want to know more about your upcoming shows and want to get some of your music?
Yeah, so the best way to find all things Nick Boardman is www.nickboardman.com. I have a booking submission form there. You can send me any inquiries you'd like. I also have my social media handles there. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's all at Nick Boardman, NickBoardman. And yeah, feel free to check it out. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, and wherever you stream music. It's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. So good internet presence, a nice, consistent handle for all your accounts there. So makes you easy to find.
Yes, yeah. In the past, some people spelt the name wrong. It's not the most common name.
So really?
They throw an A in there or something that. Yeah, but yeah. I'm not that wooden, so it doesn't really work.
Yeah, I get it. So those are upcoming gigs, upcoming EP coming out. A little bit more bluesy, a little bit more jazzy, you said. Looking forward to all of that. Send it our way when you have it produced and then stick it on the air. Maybe come back and feature you again to hype the album as it comes out.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate you having us, Bob. That was great, and we'll certainly be back. This was great.
Yeah. When you're doing performances, do you think about the audience? Do you get the feedback from the audience? You said that was part of the course that you were taking, that you're supposed to pay attention to the audience.
Yes.
When you're in a bar, does it bug you when people aren't listening to the music? You know, they're chatting and conversing and just doing all things except enjoying the music?
It used to. It really did when we would be playing a small, intimate venue, especially where there's maybe less than 50 people in there. And you kind of can see the face of everybody that's listening to the music or not listening to the music. And it really used to get in my head and go, I'm just kind of background music. I'm just kind of be to whatever their night is. I'm just kind of in the background. But I think as I've kind of progressed as a performer and entertained a little bit more in different diverse settings, I've kind of come to realize, especially in a bar setting like that, you are an important part of that night. People are sitting down, they're enjoying themselves, they're enjoying each other, and they might be conversing, they might be having drinks or doing something else, but you're adding to that environment. And I think as a performer, it's your job to kind of understand the environment that you're in. And, we change our song selection based on the environment we're in or the reception of the crowd. We have some songs that are a little bit interactive that require a little bit of crowd work. If we're in a setting that doesn't feel like it would kill or it would work in there, we don't do it. Or if it's a little bit more of a softer venue, we kind of play accordingly to that.
You can change it up on the fly. It's not like you've got a set list that is invariable.
Yes, yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons I value the guys that I do play with, especially somebody like Caleb. I think that's why we work well together, is Caleb has that skill. He bases his playing off the reception of the crowd, and I think even vocally, the way that I'm kind of reading the room, we don't even have to speak. I don't even have to look at him and go, drop this song or do this. I think we've kind of understood each other based on the set list and now playing with each other for the past year or so.
Okay. When you're out touring, doing the live shows, do you have the same lineup every time, you, Caleb, and the rest of the band, or does that change depending on the venue you're at?
Typically, it's the same guys. Caleb's very active with his own career as well, so sometimes Caleb can't make a date, so we might have to sub somebody in. Typically, on bass is the only one that we really sub. Mitch Camacho from Toronto with the upright bass, he's very busy gigging himself, so sometimes he can't make a date, so then I'll sub in a local sub, Sam Weber, who's an electric bass player.
Okay.
But primarily, the rest of the lineup remains the same.
Okay, and how does that work? How do the other musicians get to know the Nick Boardman music?
Yeah, so typically what we do is I'll send them a set list. If a player requests some charts or something like that, we'll get that set up for them. Okay. But usually we just kind of send a playlist over. It'll sit with them for about a month or so. And then we'll meet up and we'll have two or three rehearsals. And we'll kind of just play the songs. And dynamically might change some things. Or we'll just go, this song doesn't work for us, and we'll drop the song.
Okay.
So it's kind of just getting together and really hammering it out.
So anytime you go on stage, you've had practice sessions with musicians before?
Primarily, yes. Yeah. There has been songs we've just liked and we thought, let's just do it right now. And thankfully they've worked out. But most of the time, yes, it's a rehearsed show.
Did it work like that with the session musicians in the studio too? Or did they just come in cold?
Most of them come in cold. Sometimes they'll just get emailed a chart, and that day they'll just send back their part. And they're just, that's their career. They're so used to just acting on the fly like that. So it's just coming back and forth within an hour almost.
Okay. That's the kind of stuff you do, Caleb, right?
Yeah, I do. I do a decent amount of session work here and there.
Yeah. That's got to be a little stressful, you know. You get handed a set of dots on a white page, and you have to make music out of that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the biggest thing is it's just like you have to get a really great performance, right? You have to physically execute very well, but then you also have to make a great part, right? So you could play the smoothest, cleanest chords ever, but it might just be the wrong thing for the song.
Right.
So you could send it back to the producer, and you think it's great, and then they say, that's terrible, man, do it again. So you really have to kind of check your ego at the door, because everyone gets replaced, and everyone gets, your parts are never, you can't be precious about your parts, because you have to kind of do what the producer says.
Does it ever happen that you've contracted somebody to play some music for you on a studio album, and then not use that track at all?
That has happened a couple times. It's just not to demean them as a player or anything. It's just the tonality in which they're playing didn't fit the song. Okay. And we sent it back and said, maybe try this. And it came back. And that's just the player. And it just that player just didn't jive with the song.
Yeah. And then you have to go out and find somebody else to fill that part in.
Yeah, exactly. And then, sometimes even through that process, though, you kind of end up something with even better than you had hoped for, because you find somebody that maybe adds something different. But there is times where it's not what you're looking for.
How long does it take? How long does it take from going in and talking to Matt Cable and saying, I want to cut a track, having it actually published in a streaming site?
Yeah, I mean, it could be really as fast as a day if you really wanted it to. We usually try, I would say probably is about a month or two before it's written to being out and released, just so that we can get all the session work done, Matt can engineer it properly, and Matt's also juggling, I would say, four or five artists at the moment that are all kind of actively releasing.
Okay.
So it's kind of, I have to fit within the schedule of what he's doing. But for the most part, it can be as fast as a process you'd like it to be, or it can be as slow as you'd like to.
And I guess with everybody doing stuff in individual tracks from their own studios, there's no studio time that needs to be booked at the production facility.
Right, right. And especially coming out of the pandemic, it was just, I think this will be the new norm moving forward. I know there is people, like we had mentioned, prefer live off the floor, and that's something that's great too, and that's something that's still happening, but there is this alternative to being live off the floor, doing session work.
Yeah, it's all kind of new to me, It's I've never been much into the music industry in the first place, and then learning everything has changed is kind of whip-snapping to a new paradigm, I can't keep up. Things are changing so fast, I can't keep up. I mean, digital audio workstations, for example, DAWs, didn't exist, 5-10 years ago?
No, and that's one place that I'm a little, that's my weak point, is navigating DAWs, and I mean just technology in general. I'm a bit of a slow roll with technology myself, so doing that DAW work, it definitely helps when there's an engineer in the room to kind of assist me with that.
Yeah. When you're doing something, do you find that the mechanics of recording get in the way of the performance itself?
There's times, yes. Yeah, I think that's something that I'm still working on. Maybe something's not working or something's crashed or, there's just things outside of your control that you cannot do. And you thought you just did the best vocal line you've ever done and it's gone.
It's gone.
And so you got to try to mirror what you just did, and you get into your head and it becomes a whole problem. But usually that's not the case. Usually the technology works with us, not against us, but there are times it doesn't work.
Yeah. And make backups, right?
Yes, especially. Hard drives are a heck of a thing.
Yeah. All right. Do you have time for one more, or are we out of repertoire today?
No, we can keep going.
Okay, got about 5 minutes left. So let's have one final song by Nick Boardman and Caleb Koo.
All right, here's a little country rockabilly tune for you. Moving on over.
Well, I came in last night about 10:30. Baby of mine, she wouldn't let me in. I said, move it on over. Rock it on over. Move up a little, talk the big dog moving in. Well, she changed the lock on my back door, and now my key don't fit no more. I say, move it on over, rock it on over. Move up a little, talk the big dog moving in.
Take a killer.
Crawled back to me on her knees, but I'm busy scratching brand new fleas. I say, move it on over, rock it on over. Move over, skinny dog, a fat dog moving in.
doghouse here, it's kind of small. It's better than no house at all. I think move it on over. Rock it on over. Move over, little dog, the big dog moving in.
Listening to CKNS Community Connections with a live performance by Nick Boardman and Caleb Koo. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much for coming into the studio. It's been a blast. Definitely saving the best music for last. You've been listening to CKMS Community Connections on Radio Waterloo, CKMS FM 102.7. CKMS Community Connections is a production of Radio Waterloo, sponsored by Radio Waterloo. Executive producer is Jennifer Strong. Associate producer is Jeff Steger. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday at 11 a.m. and alternate Fridays at 3 p.m. You want to just doodle on something and take me out, Caleb?